Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Coming up today, we'll talk with the author who's covered the far right in the U.S. for many years, and he's been warning about post-election violence since the early part of this year. We're going to talk with him in a few minutes. In the wake of the news that the FBI is tracking an extensive amount of online chatter calling for armed protests leading up to the inauguration. But first, a bunch of listener comments that have come in the last 24 hours. We've been talking about the attempted takeover of the U.S. Capitol, and here's what some more listeners have been saying.
This is John Foster in Boca Grande. One thing that I've noticed is that how much this insurrection is being led by people who are adherents of gun ownership, believe in violence, but yet say it's a religious thing and that they have the right to do what they want to do in the name of freedom. But isn't that the same problem that we were having with the Muslim extremists? The exact same. And there's no real difference. And if those guys are our country's enemies, then aren't the present people here in this country who are doing all this stuff, aren't they our enemies? And if so, they should be treated harshly, I'm afraid. And also, how do you get to the truth? I think if the FCC were to actually do its job and prevent all of these people from spreading all of this propaganda online that it's false, shut them down somehow.
This is David from Bradenton. I noticed after this incident here, even for a while, you've been always advocating, trying to say, how do we calm the tone down? And I agree with that 100%, except for in this most recent thing regarding Trump. It's not we. There's not people on both sides. It's only one side that fails to believe in facts, and you can't debate them. As soon as you bring up a source or try to talk about the truth, they immediately go to false mainstream media. You can't debate them. And the other thing I would say as far as trying to get us to tone things down is, we're angry. People are angry over this, and sometimes anger is required to get change. And I think anger and what happened last Wednesday the 6th, that's appropriate in this case. And I know we need to keep our discourse even, but at some point you just have to call it out for what it is. And in this case, I think we are all rightly angered.
Hi, Rob. This is Kevin Marsh in Avon Park. I was thinking about Trump wanting Section 230, and at the risk of agreeing with him, maybe we should be looking at these protections for Internet platforms. Newspapers and radio stations can't just broadcast lies that damage people. They get sued for libel and slander. Maybe Internet platforms should also be responsible when they publish some of this stuff. Imagine Twitter might have kicked Trump off a lot sooner if they were held liable for the lies. Thank you.
Rob, it's Rob in North Sasa. You're asking who these folks think is they're fighting, in the government. And I would say the answer is vaguely, they would say the globalists. And someone I know is very deeply into this stuff, and so I kind of have an inside view of it, I think, a little bit. And I pointed out after the coup was put down, and I said, I was being somewhat sarcastic, but not really. I said, I side with Mitch McConnell, Dick Cheney, George Bush, George W. Bush, and others in condemning it and saying that, this is not, that the election is valid and that the votes need to be confirmed and that this action in the Capitol is anti-democratic and it's a kind of form of terrorism. He said, well, everyone knows they're all globalists. I mean, that was the comeback from that. So it's just a very, like, it's like a house of mirrors, you know. If you're for Trump, you're a patriot. If you're not, you're a globalist. It's kind of a catch-all answer, and then you kind of make it up as you go along, you know. Well, it's very difficult to argue, you know, because with anyone, or to make a point with anyone that's gone down that rabbit hole because of this very thing. Believe me, it's not about Republican and Democrat or liberal or conservative. It's all Alex Jones driven, this idea of taking words like a patriot and tyranny and just sort of twisting them around to mean really, frankly, the opposite. It's very scary, but that's what I think the answer would be. We're fighting the globalists, this sort of vague term. Thank you.
Hello, Rob. This is Kevin in Bradenton. Just want to leave a message about today's Thursday show, Radioactivity. I just want to say, while I'm not sure of Russia's involvement in the insurrection at the Capitol, I am sure that champagne corks were popping aplenty in the Kremlin when they saw the scene in Washington, D.C. That I do know.
This is James in St. Pete. I just saw President-elect Biden's speech, and I got to tell you something. In a few short words, it sounded a lot better than, "I won the election."
This is Jim from Gulf City. On today's show, you asked how we came to the rapid division in our country, and it's propaganda on steroids. There's a concerted effort to divide our nation. The propagandists use age-old tactics, fear, patriotism, racist tropes, religion, to whip up a frenzy, not only among the uneducated people. Cambridge Analytica was just the tip of the iceberg. There are now dozens of Cambridge Analyticas. Who is funding this mass brainwashing? The corporations and elite one percenters.
Well, there you have a bunch of listener comments that have come in the last 24 hours. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to talk about the terrible incident that happened on January 6th. And we're hoping to get a guest on today. He's on the West Coast, and I think he's not up yet. So in the meantime, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. I'm going to suggest a few things that we could talk about. At least 21 current or former members of the U.S. military and law enforcement have been identified as being in or near last week's Capitol riot, with more than a dozen others now under investigation. That's what an Associated Press review of public records and social media found. In many cases, those who stormed the Capitol appear to employ tactics, body armor, and radio headsets that were similar to those used by police or the military. Experts have long warned about extremists recruiting people within the military and law enforcement, and they say that the January 6th insurrection saw some of their worst fears realized. The FBI is tracking an extensive amount of concerning online chatter, including calls for armed protests leading up to next Wednesday's presidential inauguration. That's according to FBI Director Chris Wray. Wray says the FBI remains concerned about the potential for violence at protests and rallies in Washington, D.C., and in state capitals around the country in the coming days. Federal agents have accused an Arkansas man of beating a police officer with a flagpole flying a U.S. flag during last week's riot at the U.S. Capitol. In an arrest affidavit, an FBI agent says that the protester, Peter Francis Steger, is shown in video and photographs striking a police officer who's on the ground, striking the police officer repeatedly with the pole with the American flag attached. That was after rioters had dragged the officer downstairs on the Capitol's west side. And a prosecutor says a retired Air Force officer who was part of the mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol carried plastic zip-tie handcuffs because he meant to take hostages. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Larry Rendell Brock, Jr. appeared at a detention hearing in Fort Worth, Texas yesterday. 53-year-old is charged with knowingly entering or remaining in a restricted building and violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. The judge allowed him to go home and be confined there. His attorney said he did nothing wrong. And federal prosecutors say that the rioters last week at the U.S. Capitol intended to capture and assassinate elected officials. Reuters is reporting this morning, as are other news outlets, that prosecutors offered that view in a filing asking a judge to detain Jacob Chansley, the Arizona man and QAnon conspiracy theorist who was famously photographed wearing horns as he stood at the desk of Vice President Mike Pence in the chamber of the U.S. Senate. The detention memo, written by the Justice Department lawyers in Arizona, goes into greater detail about the FBI's investigation into Chansley, revealing that he left a note for the Vice President, Vice President Pence, on his desk, warning, quote, "It's only a matter of time. Justice is coming," unquote. Strong evidence, prosecutors wrote, that Chansley and his actions and others at the Capitol support the intent of the Capitol rioters. Their intent was to capture and assassinate elected officials in the United States government. So that's some alarming news coming out this morning. And I'm just going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls and see what you think about it. Looks like we may not be able to get in touch with our guest today. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And as Cindy Philpott is our phone producer today, we're going to take some phone calls from listeners and read some of these emails that have come in so far. You can send your email, your comments, to dj@wmnf.org. But given everything that we know and everything that's come out so far, it looks like it was far, far, far more dangerous than the initial reports that we were getting. David writes this, and unfortunately our guest is not here, but he says, could your guest speak about the white nationalist website Stormfront? So, David, we might be able to get to that if our guest comes on. Susan in Lakeland writes, what those people, those insurrectionists, did on Wednesday, January 6th, was to take an assassination vacation, a term coined by author Sarah Vowell. They came to D.C., probably most checked into hotels, and then proceeded to pick up their implements of destruction, charge the Capitol, beat the police, terrorize the Congress members and all the aides and anyone in the Capitol. Then, after being chased out of the People's House, they went back to their hotels with their implements of destruction, checked out, flew home, and continued life as normal. This is sick and sounds just right for Trump supporters. They all disgust me and all should be charged, convicted, and incarcerated, writes Susan. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. We might be able to get in touch with our guest. Let's see if I can reach him as we're talking here. Kevin writes this regarding fascism. He says, when fascism comes to America, it will arrive wrapped in the flag and holding a Bible. Not sure where I heard this, but it rings true after January 6th, writes Kevin. So again, I'm trying to get in touch with a guest to talk about the rise of the far right. And so far, this isn't working out very well. And Cindy Philpott is back there answering our phones, and let's hope our phone system is working this morning, too. And you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's see if we can get these phones to work. And if you want to send in your email, you can send it to dj@wmnf.org, dj@wmnf.org. Well, I know we've got a couple of people online, and we'll see if we can get them on. And let's go to John in Port Richey. John, thanks a lot for calling up and rescuing me with everything that's going on. Well, so what would you like to comment about?
I'm glad I could rescue, but
thank you.
A couple of things. One, you said there was military people in there. I remember a caller a while back said apparently that military people can be reactivated and then charged with the military in the military court system.
Yeah, no, I've not looked that up, but yes, we had a caller who said that, yes.
Okay, so I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm wondering if that could happen with these people that you just mentioned that had ties to the military. And the other thing, I sent you an email earlier this morning about a question, or I thought that I had. It's like, how many times has a so-called liberal news organization or opinion organization been sued or threatened to be sued with a lawsuit because they're propagating lies, kind of like what happened with Newsmax and Fox, where Smart Tech threatened a lawsuit against them unless they retracted their statements. And I guess now Cindy Powell has one too that's going forth in the past 10 years. I'm just kind of curious. I was just doing a cursory search, and I thought maybe you might have a better idea to how to search that and what to do and come up with that information, because I just find it amazing that probably you'll find hardly no lawsuits brought against a, quote, liberal news organization, but yet there's two of them that I know against conservative organizations. And maybe that's what we need to do to shine the light on the misinformation and the propaganda that's being projected or being propagated on the conservative media.
Yeah, liberal news organizations or mainstream news organizations have been sued many, 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 many times over the last 10 years.
Okay.
Sometimes for political reasons, sometimes because they got the story wrong. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say that they've not been sued.
Okay. Yeah, I was just trying to look it up, and I didn't find any. And I understand that they make mistakes.
Yeah, no, there are lots of cases where they've been sued.
Where they do that, but I don't not aware of any where they were threatened with a lawsuit and they had to publicly retract what they said.
But there is a significant lawsuit this time around that I think is going to be interesting to watch, and that's by the Dominion Voting System Company, and they're suing Fox News. And John, thanks a lot. Thanks for breaking the ice there. Let's listen to something that happened the other day on MSNBC, and this is Steve Schmidt, who formerly worked for John McCain, and he's now part of one of the founders of the Lincoln Project. And he mentions the lawsuit by Dominion, but listen to what he had to say. He was asked about the impeachment of Donald Trump, and he had this to say. Maybe.
Look, this is kind of gross way to put it, but I had hoped that Trump was, you know, a pimple on the body politic. It turns out he is a cancer. But our next guest seeks to be the chemo. Steve Schmidt's here, a political strategist and co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Steve Schmidt, I'll let you get in on the news of the day in a minute. I want you to address what John Heilman's talking about, this toxic and now dangerous threat of political violence because of Donald Trump and his intention and his doing in full sight the radicalization of his base with a flurry of lies, a blizzard of lies, repeated in direct messages, texts, emails from him to them, and amplified on conservative media. What do we do? How do we get out of this?
Here are the things that have to come together for an autocratic movement to take root. This is an autocratic movement and has taken root on American soil. And John is right. It will take years, if not decades, for us to be able to deal with it and defeat it. We certainly are not in a position where we can ever lose a national election again to the autocratic side, or it will be the last election. But what has to come together? The first thing is the charismatic autocratic leader. The second is the masses. This is a mass movement. And the people that we saw storming the Capitol 100 years ago, they would have been wearing black shirts in Italy, brown shirts in Germany. This is Trump's SA. These are the marginalized people that 20 years ago, we would have called these people losers, fringe people on society, aggrieved, thinking they're owed something. You need to have the propagandists. And so the big lie has been spread by Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and Laura Ingraham and Fox News and OAN and Newsmax. But the last component they needed to lift this autocratic movement off the ground, to do the violence that they did, it needed the lift of the cynical elites. Josh Hawley, Stanford University, taught at Oxford, Yale Law School, Ted Cruz, Harvard Law School, the people that the country has afforded every conceivable privilege to, who turned against and betrayed it. And so we have to fight back against this. A lot of these members on the Republican side say, now we need unity. There will be no unity with seditionists. The only thing we offer them is the chance for them to apologize and to retire from public life. That's the only thing we can do. Only two ways to win a fight, Nicole. to bring your opponent to defeat through submission, or they get you through exhaustion. And we can't become exhausted in this fight. There's only one way to win. And so corporate America is doing its part. We have dozens and dozens of companies have said we'll never fund these people again. We will have long contests in the electoral realm that will determine the future of the country. And lastly, I want to make this point because it's been an underemphasized point. 147 members of the House stood up after the insurrection, after the violence, to throw out the results of the election. This was a new Jim Crow. 147 white members rose up to throw out tens of millions of black votes for no reason, on the basis of a lie that was rejected in more than 50 federal court decisions as this election result was adjudicated after November 3rd. And so corporate America is never coming back to Kevin McCarthy, because these companies, that took positions on Black Lives Matter, who talked about racial injustice, cannot ever support the side that sought to throw out the votes of their black customers and their black employees. And so we have to shut down the financing. The Dominion voting system lawsuit is the most important civil litigation maybe ever in the history of the country, because it has the potential to bankrupt Fox News, bankrupt Newsmax, bankrupt OAN. It certainly will keep those companies from getting the financing they need to expand, but it's going to put the truth on trial. And in the end, we will have to defeat these autocrats on the battlefield of ideas. But the pro-democracy side cannot be the gentle side of the debate. And so when Lindsey Graham or Kevin McCarthy say, oh, now we need unity, we need to lower the temperature, what we need in this country is accountability. Accountability for the poisoning of faith and belief in democracy, accountability for the violence done to the people of the United States, accountability for the desecration of what Joe Biden, the president-elect, called the citadel of democracy, accountability for the desecration of the floor of the House of Representatives and the floor of the United States Senate.
All right, so that's Steve Schmidt. You can see the whole thing on the MSNBC website. He was on the other night. Steve Schmidt, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, mentioning the lawsuit by the Dominion Voting Company against some of the most conservative media in the country. We're joined now by Dave Nywert. Dave is the author of Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. He's on the phone with us, and he says that what happened a week ago Wednesday was the apotheosis of the GOP's two decades and longer descent into right-wing authoritarianism. And Dave joins us on the phone. Dave, thanks for coming on MNF. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So, Dave, you say that this is just where the Republican Party has been heading since Reagan. Tell us why.
Well, I mean, I published a book in 2009 called The Eliminationist. Subtitle was How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right. And really, it was about how the Republican Party and conservative movement generally had during, really, during the Bush years, begun to really embrace authoritarianism, particularly in terms of the conduct of the Iraq War and post 9/11. Attempt to be the world's cop. What I did somewhat anticipate that this was going to be taking off during the Obama years, and indeed it did. The real radicalization of the Republican Party, I think, took place, through the auspices of the Tea Party. The sort of events surrounding that. It was when we started to see right-wing media really embrace disinformation and regurgitate it unthinkingly, and I'm thinking particularly of the truly nonsensical birther conspiracy theories. And not only that, what we were seeing, what I was seeing when I was going to Tea Party gatherings, particularly in the interior West, was that they had become really massive conduits for right-wing extremist beliefs from the so-called Patriot militia movement of the 90s. I wrote a book about mid-99 and have been covering, you know, on the ground since 93 and 94.
Dave, I got to ask you, you know, back in 1961, 62, and then again in 65, William F. Buckley, who was the founder of the National Review, which was the kind of the flagship conservative magazine in the country back then, took on the John Birch Society. And
right. And
the John Birch Society really believed that President Eisenhower was an agent of the international communist conspiracy. They believed that fluoridated water was the attempt by the Russians or the Soviets then to take over the U.S. and somehow diminish the mental capacity of Americans. And so Buckley looked at that, all these conspiracy theories that were being put out in the early 1960s by the John Birch Society, and really convinced the Republican Party, this is crazy, let's stay away from that, and we'll gain more sophisticated, smart, moderate voters, and we'll become a national party. And in 64, Goldwater was trounced, but then Nixon came back in 68 and won. So I'm wondering, today, the Tea Party, and now the QAnon people, they really believe in the kind of craziness that the John Birch Society believed in the early 1960s.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in it in southern Idaho. We had a very strong John Birch Society culture down in both Idaho and Utah at the time. And I remember being told that our high school that kids who grew long hair were succumbing to the massive communist conspiracy that the Beatles were communists and so on and so forth, you know. I mean, I grew up bathing in this stuff, which is part of probably why I'm somewhat immune to it. But there's no question that the John Birch Society, I mean, the Birchers actually played a significant role in promoting the militia concept in the 1990s. They had a big role in sort of getting that ball rolling. And, you know, they've been with us ever since, you know. I mean, the sort of simmering beneath the surface. But yeah, you know, I would go to these Tea Party gatherings in Montana and Idaho in late 2009 and 2010, and they were virtually indistinguishable from the militia meetings I was seeing in the 1990s, and they were very much inflected with Bircherite conspiracism. I mean, that's sort of their hallmark.
The other day, Ted Cruz, and you pointed this out in an article for the Daily Coast, that Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, tweeted after the attempted takeover of the Capitol. He said, "This is not who we are." But yet, tell me about Ted Cruz and whether or not he's encouraged this kind of right-wing violence.
Well, yeah, actually, I think Cruz may be facing some legal jeopardy over his role in the storming of the Capitol. I think, he was going to the Trump train rallies. He was telling people, you got to fight like hell or you're not going to have a country anymore, you know, type stuff. He was whipping up the crowds. I'm sorry, but, you know, that stuff led to an insurrection.
So has the Republican Party then, I mean, if most of them think that the election was stolen and think that, you know, and many of them think it was okay to try to invade the Capitol, although I haven't seen the latest numbers, but then does that mean that the Republican Party now is a fascist party?
Proto-fascist, certainly. I mean, I would say that they are, I would call them fascist when they really embrace the paramilitarism, and I think that they're edged right up to that right now. Certainly, they seem to be, I mean, the fact, as you mentioned, I mean, certainly the early polls indicated that something like 45% of Trump voters approved of the insurrection, and 68% thought that it posed no threat to democracy. And, you know, and we already know that 82% of Trump voters believe that Joe Biden won fraudulently. I don't know how you're going to get around that, because it's, you know, what it really comes down to in many ways is this environment of disinformation and misinformation that's been going on for the last really 10 years, but has intensified during the Trump era, and particularly in the last year. You know, we know that QAnon's audience grew significantly during the pandemic because people were sitting around in their homes stuck on the internet, and they'd go down these rabbit holes. And, you know, so we have a social media problem. We have a party that has embraced this kind of insanity. You know, there are still some people who, within the Republican Party, who do not want to go along with this. And I don't know what's going to happen to the party. I think it could very well split in two between the Trumpist and the non-Trumpist components. But the reality is that the authoritarianism that underlies Trumpism is really something that has been magnified and exacerbated by Trump and by the Trump administration, and now it's being exacerbated even more in the post-election period, because one of the ways authoritarianism works is that it separates its the people who are within its reach or who subscribe to it. It separates them from reality, the more people that they can separate from reality, the more they can drive that wedge between a thinking public that is based in reality and the Trumpist crowd that wants to adamantly embrace fantasy. The more they sort of gain their power over those people, you know, the more the power over those people increases. And right now, what we're seeing them is spinning off into real radicalism, violent radicalism, where, you know, a lot of people are fleeing Twitter and Facebook and going to these smaller platforms, particularly, the people who were chased off Parler. They're going to these smaller platforms, and they're hiding, or, you know, they're reconstituting themselves in these less troublesome or really less restrictive platforms. Smaller platforms like, you know, Telegram, which, you know, gained, I think, 25 million new users in the past week, and Gab, the white nationalist version of Twitter. That's where we're seeing a lot of them go and reorganize themselves, reconstitute themselves, and they're going to continue organizing. They're just not going to have the massive reach and recruitment ability that they used to have. But they're not going away.
Our guest is Dave Nywert. He's the author of Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump, and he's also on the staff of the Daily Coast. He wrote a piece the other day called The Siege of the Capitol is the Culmination of the GOP's Long Embrace of Anti-Democratic Authoritarianism. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And when you talk about their embrace of authoritarianism, I was thinking back to the Bush years, and you were right about this, that if you were against the invasion of Iraq after 9/11, you were called on the side of terrorists, or you were helping the terrorists win by opposing the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Now you can't find anybody, even in the Republican Party, who supports that invasion. And I'm thinking how short memories are. I mean, you talk about the John Birch Society saying, if you like the Beatles, you're a communist. You know, the memories are short for these people in these movements.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they... it's very short. I mean, just think, Rob, of this dominant Republican narrative that's been going around for the past year that, oh, the real problem is the violent leftists We're facing violence from Antifa and Black Lives Matter and blah, 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 blah. And we've been building it up, you know, mostly around the summer anti-police brutality protests. But the reality is that, you know, and of course there was some violence there, but it wasn't terribly lethal. In fact, the only police officer we had killed during the protest this summer was a federal officer caught or killed by a right-wing Boogaloo extremist down in Oakland, who was trying to amplify the violence. And, you know, a lot of these right-wing folks have been were lurking around the fringes of those protests to try to amplify the violence because they're very interested in creating this narrative of a violent left. But the reality, of course, what they skip out on is all of the violence has been inflicted on the American public for just, say, the last 4 years during Trump by right-wing extremists. And I'm thinking of terrorist violence. You know, I'm talking about Patrick Crugius killing 22 people in El Paso and Robert Bowers mowing down 11 people in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. That stuff just disappears from their radar. They completely forget about it. It's like, oh yeah, you know, well,
yeah, the danger's on the left.
Violence, we can't see it, but if it's left wing violence, oh my God, it's going to destroy the nation.
Yeah,
you know.
Let me ask you about Q, because I think part of the reason why some of the far right are so riled up is that they expected President Trump to arrest thousands of Americans, Hollywood types, liberals, and put them in jail because they're part of his, what he thinks is the deep state or the vast sex trafficking conspiracy. So that was called the storm. They keep waiting for it. It hasn't happened. All the predictions of Q haven't happened. But yet, there was, in the 80s and 90s, the neo-Nazis in the U.S., they called themselves, or their website, the Stormfront. And I'm wondering, is there a connection between the storm and the Stormfront? And what do you make of the Q people that, you know, believe in this Q conspiracy?
Well, no, I don't think there is any known connection between the storm and Stormfront. I think that just kind of is something that they cobbled up over first on 4chan. I think it's where the first Q posts appeared. It was either 4chan or 8chan that we started hearing about the storm, the mass crackdown on all these liberal figures who were about to be arrested. You know, Tom Hanks, Oprah Winfrey. and you know, and of course, we also heard all about how all of these abducted children were being secretly held in a tunnel, a system of tunnels somewhere, where, of course, they were being hard. They're having their blood sucked out of them to harvest the adrenochrome that could be then consumed by George Soros and Hillary Clinton to extend their lives. You know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff they believe. And it is, I mean, the striking thing about QAnon is how really completely crazy, I mean, just completely out to lunch, the stuff that you have to believe in order to subscribe to this theory. And yet, and what is remarkable about that is that we're seeing people go so far down these conspiracy theory rabbit holes that any kind of vestige of common sense or decency just vanishes. And, you know, that's some really deep conspiracy holes. I've seen people at various stages of being consumed by conspiracy theories. And, you know, people, there are some people who just do it lightly, some people who go into it mostly embracing the sort of surface aspects of it. But the, you know, the true believers, man, they believe all this stuff. And, you know, you only get down those rabbit holes, thank you, thanks to algorithms that are out there on YouTube and Google and Facebook and Twitter that direct people further down those rabbit holes. That's a lot of why we saw such a massive increase during the pandemic, because, like I say, people were sitting on the internet and spending time, and as it happens, the internet is designed to drive people down those holes.
Mm. Dave, we're almost out of time, but where do you think this is heading? I mean, there are all these reports that the far right is very angry. They may launch attacks on state capitals or in Washington, D.C. in the next few days. There have been assassination attempts. People have attempted to kidnap the governor of Michigan. Where do you think this is headed?
Well, I think that Americans need to embrace, or, you know, sort of prepare themselves for the reality that we're really going to have at least 4 years of insurgency, anti-democratic insurgency from the radical right. There are too many people out there who have been thoroughly radicalized, and the process of de-radicalization is a slow and difficult one. It doesn't happen very quickly, and there are no mass solutions for it. It has to happen, you know, really almost on a one-to-one basis. And right now we don't even have a media that is recognizing sort of the source of the problem. They won't acknowledge that, you know, we have a serious disinformation problem. But like I say, when 82% of Republican voters believe that Biden won fraudulently, when there is not even a scintilla of evidence of that, I think says a tremendous amount about the state of the conservative movement in this country. And that's, you know, it's 74 million people, according to the tab under Donald Trump's votes. So, and those people aren't going away, and they're going to remain, if not as currently radicalized, they likely are to become even more radicalized and more violent. So, you know, right after, I think, November 14th or 15th was the first sort of Proud Boys protest in downtown Washington, D.C., and then the December 12th one, I wrote at the time that I thought that those were really going to be a preview of what we're going to be seeing over the next 4 years, which is a sustained sort of resistance and really insurgency by the radical right. And, you know, it's going to take a couple of forms. We're going to be seeing street violence like we saw with the Proud Boys, Proud Boys style street violence, a lot of that where basically you get these right-wing thugs from rural areas and suburban areas and ex-urban areas to go invade these liberal urban centers with the intention of creating violence, because that's what we've been seeing for the last 4 years, and they really perfected that strategy. So we're going to see more of that, but we're also going to see a lot more domestic terrorism, and that terrorism is probably going to have two different major varieties. We're going to see a continuing drumbeat of so-called lone wolf domestic terrorism that, of course, has been part of the radical right's sustained terrorist strategy for the last 30 years, as well as I think we're going to really see an increase in sort of militia-style, small-cell terrorism from groups like, you know, Adam Waffen SS and the base and these neo-Nazi paramilitary groups that are going out and training and preparing to engage in acts of terrorism. So, you know, I don't think they were training for nothing. Mm. I think that they're going to be active in the next 4 years. So we're going to face an array of threats. And we absolutely need to be prepared to deal with it. We can't, I think if we get caught up in let's reach out to the other side of the aisle stuff and try to heal the nation sort of thing, we're just going to keep, you know, getting a bloody stump back.
All right.
And I don't think it's going to, I don't think it's going to work.
Dave Nyward, thank you for coming on WMNF.
Hey, thank you for having me, Rob.
Thanks, Dave. And people can read your writings at Daily Kos and also your book, Alt America.
Yes, and I actually have a new book out that's about conspiracism called Red Pill, Blue Pill, How to Counteract the Conspiracy Theories That Are Killing Us.
All right. Well, Dave, thanks a lot. Well, I'll have to pick up that book. Thank you very much for coming on M&F.
It's my pleasure, Rob. You take care.
You take care, too. Thanks, Dave. Dave Nywert is a writer who's been covering the far right for years and years and warning about the danger of its rise. So let's take some phone calls from listeners. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Mike in Sarasota. Mike, what would you like to comment about?
Good afternoon, Rob. Would like to comment about the fact that a number of people, and I think including you, have complained about the supposedly different treatment given to the Stop the Steal protesters as compared to the Black Lives Matter protesters. And they've claimed that, oh, well, this is due to racism or some kind of insider sympathy towards the Stop the Steal people. But there is a much simpler and more obvious explanation, and that is that the Stop the Steal movement had no history of violence erupting from their mass demonstrations because they had never had any mass demonstrations before. Now, with BLM, there certainly was a history of violence.
Well, wait a minute. Mike, wait a minute. I mean, the far right, the Stop the Steal movement includes white nationalists, it includes neo-Nazis, it includes the KKK. They have a long history of violence. So when you say Stop the Steal doesn't have a history of violence, you're not paying attention to who's part of Stop the Steal. Forgive me for saying that, but you're not being accurate.
Well, no, but I think the Stop the Steal as a movement in...
No. Stop the Steal includes white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK, and their use of violence is well known. And if you haven't paid attention to it, I think I'm going to just have to drop you from the phone, Mike.
Well, that's like saying that in Black Lives Matter that there are felons and there are murderers.
Yeah, but did you see the photos of the people that were on the inside of the Capitol? With Confederate flags, neo-Nazi symbols. They had zip ties. They carried bear spray. I mean, these were not just people that were democratically protesting a supposedly stolen election. These people, according to the FBI, were there to capture and assassinate elected officials. So, I think you've got your head in the sand, Mike.
The fact is, there had never been a Stop the Steal mass demonstration.
All right, Mike, you're not paying attention to who's part of Stop the Steal. I understand what you're trying to say. You're trying to say that there's a group of people that are just worried about democracy. But if you look at the membership, and I'm not talking about the fringe membership, I'm talking about the leaders, they had violence in their hearts, in their minds. Mike, I just can't do it. I'm sorry, can't go there. You might try another conservative radio station. I'm sure they'll like to hear that. Let's go to Eric in Tampa. Eric, thank you for calling. What would you like to say? Hi, Eric. You're on M&F.
Hello.
Eric.
Hi. Hey, yes, I had a question for you. If anyone has history on the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, can a house still stand divided alone and protect its citizens now?
House divided against itself cannot stand. Lincoln said that. Let's go to Darnell in Bradenton. Hi, Darnell. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. I was wondering where all this outrage of the violence was last summer when BLM and Antifa were tearing things up. Where was, weren't you guys the ones who wanted to defund the cops then?
I'll tell you what we did. We put on a lot of protesters. Most of the protests were peaceful. There were millions of people that took part in peaceful marches in Tampa and St. Petersburg and Polk County and, around in Pasco County and around the country. There were some people that looted shoe stores or burned down auto parts stores. We're still not sure who conducted some of those burning situations. Sometimes it was not BLM supporters at all. And look at the video of the guy who burned down the auto parts store in Minneapolis, for instance. We didn't take a position on defund the police, but we did have a lot of people that were peacefully protesting. And, of course, we weren't outraged. How can you be outraged at peaceful protesters, Darnell? Let's go to David in Tampa. David, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, I just want to speak about touching on what you said earlier. You know, back in the day during Bush, it was you're with us, you're against us. And can you imagine if they'd had the power to do what's happening now, where it sounds like they even want to go after encrypted apps to stop terrorism, or people that, you know, there were some very true conspiracies that occurred there. You know, WikiLeaks showed that there wasn't just bad intel with WMDs. They actually knew they have WMDs, you know, and there's a possibility that there would be a very good reason to protest. I mean, there is. I mean, you know, what if Americans, I always thought something like this would happen more like the way in Europe, like when they try to take away healthcare, not, you know, trying to go and kill people. But, you know, what if the government stops that and we have some real legitimate concerns, and now we have the government. I mean, these folks that were so worried about the government and surveillance, and they're going to put tracking devices in our vaccines, go and do something so stupid to encourage more government surveillance. And the other thing I want to say is that I don't think we ought to treat all these Q people as crazies. I don't believe any of it, but we know plenty. The conversation I have all the time with so many people is like, I know a lawyer. Oh, my best friend's a doctor. He believes, like, these are scientific, smart people, family members, and they got sucked into this. And to say that that couldn't happen to the left with some figure in the future, I think is naive. And so I think it's a very delicate situation to be enforcing censorship the way that we're planning on doing here.
Yeah, who's enforcing? Who wants censorship, though? Who wants the government to come in and stop people's free speech?
Well, I just saw a thing where CNN and them are talking about, you know, how they're closing down these sites. They're talking about, well, now they need to go after apps that are encrypted to try to catch bad people. And I'm just saying, there's a delicate matter here. I mean,
I don't think anybody's saying for the government to shut down free speech, though. Or is the government shutting down free speech?
I
don't think that's happening. I mean, if you're talking about the power of corporations, well, if you choose to use Facebook, they're the power. They're in charge of Facebook. Choose to use something else. That's what I would say. Mark from Brandon writes, referring to the listener's email, Chris Hedges is a person that said that fascism will come with a flag and a Bible, writes Mark. Gail in Bel Air says that she got an appointment for a vaccination. She went to patientportalfl.com. So, Carol, thank you for that. Jeff writes, I know some people who are Trump supporters, and I don't consider them white supremacists or violent. They have just bought into this Trump religion. In a way, this reminds me of how many Muslims would be stereotyped as terrorists. I think if the Biden administration can try to enact good policies that benefit all American people, then maybe, just maybe, you can start calming some of these people down, writes Jeff. And I'm just reading these emails as they've come in. Patrick writes, Steve Schmidt is right. That's because the Republicans are full of it. And anyway, so I'm not sure I can read that, Patrick. But thank you very much for that. And a lot of emails have come in. Let me try to read these. Some are not complete thoughts here. Okay. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Rosemary in Tampa. Rosemary, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
I wanted to say thank you. I called either earlier this week or late last week, and I just wanted to thank you how you just let us call that day and just let us all vent. We were like all venting, and you're just so nice, and you just let us vent. Thank you so very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Jason writes, I have a question for the caller, Mike. If the KKK were to change its name tomorrow, does that mean that we have to go forward thinking the new group has no history of violence, writes Jason. Let's take some more phone calls. Let's go to Eddie in Tampa. Eddie, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, how you doing? I have a question that I really don't understand. They're always saying they're going to take away our rights. They're going to take away our guns. They're going to take away our rights. But yet you storm the Capitol and you get arrested. Now you're a felon. Now you lose all your gun rights. You lose all your voting rights. So what sense does that make? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand why you want to storm a Capitol and bring nooses and tear gas and zip ties to try to kidnap members of Congress. I don't understand that. Let's go to Jackson in Sarasota. Jackson, we just have 20 seconds. What would you like to say?
You and your callers and emailers are the biggest group of idiots I've ever heard in my life.
All right, Jackson, thanks a lot. Thanks for your kind words. I'm sure that really opens up a window on your heart. Thank you very much. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play those comments back on Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Janelle. She's live and in the studio. Thanks to Cindy Philpott. She's been our phone producer today. You're listening to the Bay Area's non-commercial community radio station. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Have a great weekend. Here's the news.